Michael Young is coming to us from the Bureau of Economic Geology in Austin, Texas, and is going to talk about water resources observations.
Thanks. And thanks for allowing me to be up here as an invited speaker. Todd Caldwell is really the lead of this this project, and so I want to acknowledge him and Bridget Scanlon, and just kind of describe some of the things that we're trying to do in Texas. Most people are aware that Texas underwent a huge drought in 2011, and that California is undergoing a drought of similar magnitude right now. And so so hopefully I can sort of maybe connect some of the drought and the water resources issues that these states are experiencing. And so these are the kinds of questions that we're trying to answer through this project. It was originally started, we got a call in from one of the heads of one of our agencies, and his question was really simple. He wanted to know why his boat was sitting on sand. And when the rain, we're getting near normal rainfall in Texas for across most of the state, but there's no change in the reservoir storage. And at the same time, you can see the bathtub ring here right outside of Austin, that the reservoirs themselves are essentially continuing to go down, even though we're getting a lot of precip. And the question was why. And so Todd and I were thinking, and with Bridget and some of the work that we were doing with Grace, to understand what's the connection between soil water and reservoir storage. In other words, can we consider soil water a water resource? And if so, how strongly is it connected to the water that the general public relies on pretty much daily? And so these are the questions we're trying to answer. You know, is soil water coupled to reservoir storage? And if so, how? What are the strengths of that? And can we use some of these ground measurements? And as the previous speaker was talking about, you know, and the kind of the debate between the measurement and consciousness and modeling, and how, you know, we have very few observations across a state as large as Texas. How do we take what we have and be able to sort of project going forward in terms of water resources? And so here's our state climatologist in Texas. So I'll give it away. Basically said, soil moisture is of modest value to everyone, but of critical value to no one. And so as soil scientists, we have to somehow overcome this fairly large hurdle in using soil water as a water resources component, as a tangible asset to the state. And so this is a model of multiple land data assimilation models, and you can see lines as they're moving. I guess there's a... great. Okay, so you can see over here we have water resources go up in 2005, and then here's the drought, and I'm going to probably mess this up, and there's the drought in 2011, and all of the models have this huge variability, right? I mean, we're looking at somewhere between 16 and 60 million acre-feet of water lost within the soil. It's a huge, huge amount of water, and considering that the state lost about 80 million acre-feet or acre-feet of water, that's a large, large percentage. And so, you know, this has a lot of profound impacts on things like the surface reservoirs. And so we're sort of looking at the water in Texas essentially as a stranded asset, because more than 95% of the water basins within the state are within the state of Texas. We don't have the benefit of being able to borrow Oklahoma's water. I think that they would aim their guns at us. And it is Texas, and we would shoot back. And so, you know, there's a huge climatological gradient going from East Texas to West Texas. It's about a little bit less than a millimeter for every kilometer going from east to west. And when we look at where the reservoirs are, and you can see this right in the center of the state, basically right up I-35 from San Antonio all the way to Dallas and north is where those reservoirs are cratering. We want to know why that is, and what can the soil science community do to sort of address that. And so here's a graph on the top that basically shows what the delta is from a 35-year mean in terms of the reservoir storage. You see large drops, 8 million acre-feet of water. And toward the east of the state, if we break it down a little bit further, we see the reservoirs to the east of I-35 and the eastern part of the state are doing reasonably well, but on the west side, they continue to go down. Everybody is now looking to the sky and see if we're going to get any winter rains that might reverse this. My contention is that it won't matter how much rain we get because the soil is so dry that it's simply just going to get evapotranspired back up. And if we sort of look at GRACE, now GRACE is the NASA satellite that basically looks at gravity changes on the Earth's surface from ground surface down to the MOHO. And as these two satellites are flying around the Earth, very small changes in gravity changes the position of these satellites relative to one another, and you can correlate that to the amount of gravity. So as the satellites continue to encircle the Earth and they go over multiple times, changes in the spacing between the satellites can be correlated to the amount of water and the amount of gravity that's changing, and it's almost always going to be water. So we can use GRACE as a large-scale, multiple hundreds of kilometer footprint as an estimate of how much water is entering and leaving a particular a cell or node or pixel. And you see large changes down here in 2011. This is a year, so that kind of got dropped off. This is 2012. And this is GRACE. The blue line is GRACE. The red line is the Palmer Drought Severity Index, the PDSI, which is used nationally in the drought monitors and the drought indices in the United States. And these are approximately the numbers in terms of the total water storage, the reservoir storage, and groundwater. And you see in both cubic kilometers and million acre feet, you know, you see where those numbers are. And the change in the soil water storage is really the largest component of that. And yet at the same time, Texas has this horrible monitoring program. So we put this graph in front of our legislators and we just let it sit there so they can see how well Oklahoma is doing and how badly Texas is doing. And in Texas, that matters a lot. And we just leave it there for as long as we can to see that how badly we are. And they beat us in football and they beat us in monitoring and we hate that. But all of this is essentially the triangles is the West Texas Mesonet, and that's really used for wind energy. So they have really high towers, and they have multiple anemometers so that they can better model wind, incoming wind for wind energy. And this is all the rest of the monitoring in the state. Most of the monitoring is what I would call dark data. It's data that's being collected locally, and it's lost on spreadsheets, and it's probably thousands of monitoring points that we could have access to that we really can't. A couple of scan sites, there's one or two COSMOS or people who are doing COSMOS monitoring, okay, there's one in the state right now, I think. So it's pretty bad, it's pretty sparse. And so what we're trying to do then is correlate the measurements that that we can model using the land data simulation models with measurements of total water storage with GRACE and reservoir storage, which we can monitor, and it's basically being recorded. And so this graph over here shows, you know, really the drought picture. Here's the soil water. It basically accounts in this estimate, it's about 40% of the total water loss in the state. We've been doing a lot of correlation work, Todd has, across the state and within individual river basins, and this graph here shows the correlation between the different components of the water cycle, essentially everything from the total water storage to soil moisture, as well as all the other components, which are residuals within the models, groundwater, and so on. And what you see here is about an R squared. So this is basically just a correlation coefficient that we can correlate the reservoir storage statewide to about a 0.8 with a lag of somewhere on the order about 2 to 3 months. And so I'll kind of just describe how that was done on the next slide. But the take-home message is that if we know what the soil water storage is today, we can predict what the reservoir storage is going to be in two to three months. And that gives the water managers an opportunity to make decisions on whether they should release the water to downstream users and farmers and things like that. So our goal is to operationalize the moisture network and how to do that. And so this is a graph showing the 30-day correlation. So essentially all we're doing is we're taking the measurements of total water storage and we're doing a correlation starting off with a 24-month initialization, and then we're doing about 10 years of data. So it's about 120 data points as we kind of slide going one data point after another until we can maximize on the right-hand side where we get most of the data. And you can see that the correlation, the RMSE basically increases as we go further in terms of predictability. And at some point, you know, we have such a large error that we really can't rely on that any longer for making decisions. And this is for all of the reservoirs in the state combined. But, of course, Texas has a lot of river basins, and so what we wanted to do is to granulate that a little bit on a per water basin scale. And this table shows the number of GRACE cells. So in Texas, there are 62 essentially panels as the GRACE satellite flies over. And as you start to look in these really small river basins like the Nueces and the Neches, you're only looking at 3 cells. So this is going to be a source of error because the footprint is so large. And if we use the small satellite, the European Space Agency satellite and the NLDAS, which are the land data models, we get a little bit better resolution, but we don't really have any strong true measurements. And if we look at this as I just wanted to show all of these without getting too deep into them. And the blue line is the 30-day essentially predictability. The red is the 90-day predictability, and we see that we do pretty well as we go further into the future. So it starts off with a fairly high error, and then we're able to incorporate more and more data to basically start collapsing what the error term is. And the values do pretty well for most of the basins. The Neches is pretty squirrely. We're not sure why. The Colorado, which is what Austin basically sits in the Colorado River Basin. The Brazos, this is where I think Texas A&M is in the Brazos Basin. And so we're trying to see how we might be able to use this as a predictability in the different basins. And we're trying to understand why the correlations are so different. And so one of the things we're doing is we're working with the Jet Propulsion Lab to create a core calibration site, which is for the SMAP satellite. This is the Soil Moisture Active Passive. It's essentially, which is going to be launched in early January. And so we're building one of these core sites so that we can get intensive measurements that would be used by NASA. And we're being very self-serving. We would like to help the greater good. But by being a core site, we get the data with a 50-hour latency, which means that we can essentially populate the entire state of Texas with soil moisture measurements as best as we can get for the entire state within a fast enough period that we can operationalize it if we need to. And so this is a little bit about SMAP. It's the first dedicated water content, the Theta satellite, that's been launched by NASA. It's considered one of their most expensive and most sought-after missions. They continue to delay the launch. It's now launching January 29th of next year. So everybody's holding their breath. And I met with the NASA chief scientist last week, and they just mobilized the SMAP satellite over to Vandenberg last week, and so they're basically ready to put this puppy in the air. And then once it's up, then we'll have about 6 months of wait time before we can start getting the data. Now, the downside, of course, is it only measures to 5 centimeters. So, it's not perfect, and we'll have to do some numerical arm waving to populate the soil water storage down to a 2-meter depth, which is approximately where most of the land data models are focusing. This is what the graph, this is what the CalVal site looks like. You have to have a nested sampling routine within a 36-kilometer cell, and then you nest in multiple 9-kilometer cells and then 3-kilometer cells with multiple points within each one of these cells. And you can see these are the number of stations we've installed so far. Todd's in the field today installing more of these. We have about 35 stations installed right now. We're going to have everything ready, hopefully, by the end of November. But what we're doing, and this is the reality of life in Texas, is that the land is all privately owned. And if you need to get permission to go onto somebody's land, or bad things happen, and most of the landowners don't trust universities, and so they won't let us on the land. So all these black boxes that are inside these cells are where we have permission to install sensors and sensor networks on people's ranches. And so rather than to have a sort of a broad application of the sensors, we're essentially focusing it on different types of soil texture. So across this 36-kilometer cell, there's about 20 different soil series, and we're trying to populate and characterize each of the 20 soil series with instrument networks, and then be able to then scale up for the entire 36-kilometer grid. These are just some pictures of what we're trying to put in. This is out in the hill country in Texas. So all of the sites are located over the Surgo data grid that we're using as a first cut. We're using a 30-centimeter diameter auger down to a meter, and then we're installing a series of sensors. The sensors are at multiple depths. We're getting them down to 50 centimeters. It's very difficult to go much deeper than that because you're essentially in rock and trying to install, TDR and HDR and, FDR sensors in rock is, it's not fun. And so all of these are connected up to cell towers. We're already monitoring. We have data streams now. The goal is to ultimately to capture all of the data and put it on one website, that would be maintained by the state, by the Water Development Board, which essentially is the overseeing body for water resources. And this is just some pictures. I thought these pictures were amazing. There are, Todd Spielhand is a photographer, so this looks like a picture that came out of the 1920s. So anyway, these are just some of the things that we're working on, and I don't know if I'm running short of time, but you know, my pitch here for us as soil scientists is that the soil water storage is a huge reservoir for water storage. And I think I'm sort of preaching to the converted here, but we're ignoring the use of that water reservoir to help understand water resources in, at least in my state, and perhaps every other states are facing the same thing. And that, in, if we can sort of get enough inertia, we may be able to have sort of a much larger network and be able to operationalize the data. We think we can predict reservoir storage up to 30, 60, 90 days. That gives us some predictability for people making decisions on when to release water. We know that the partitioning is very tricky. To make these forecasts, we may not really have to. We may be able to simply use the GRACE satellite as a way, once we understand what the connections are, to use the GRACE satellites to do a better job. But ultimately, we need to have the data. So this is where the observations come in, right, and avoiding the biases. We have very few observations, and it's really amazing for a state as large as Texas to have zero monitoring. It's mind-blowing. And so what we want to ultimately do is sort of create this probabilistic forecasting tool to link it up with NASA's SMAP satellite and then to be able to use it for water predictions, reservoir predictions. And so I don't know if I'm late, if I'm happy to take any questions, and if you have really hard questions, I'll be happy to have Todd answer them. Thank you. Yeah.
Two part question. First, I just want to clarify, when you talk about soil water in terms of the way you said it, do you mean basal soil moisture above groundwater?
Correct. Yes.
And
well, if you had three questions and you only could remember two, you could be the governor of Texas. Sorry. It's election day. Come on, right? Okay, so any other questions that I can make fun of? Yeah.
I like the comment from the state climate politics who said that soil moisture. And I think that possibly we're missing a trick in terms of how we communicate this importance. If you look at Sonia and Bradley's work from 2006 that said that the heat wave in 2003 in Honduras has increased in magnitude by 2 degrees.
Yeah, I'm. It's not surprising that Dave, I would agree with you. I think that this is probably one of our grand challenges. The Europeans have done a much better job at monitoring its environment. The states are very sketchy in terms of this. It's very inconsistent from state to state. You can see all the red dots in Oklahoma, and it's the gold standard of monitoring in the United States. So this is an area where we can do a lot better. It has a lot of effects, much more than just reservoirs. It has all the ecosystem services, all the climate modeling, all the runoff predictions and flood mitigation. All of those things are connected up to this. And what we're really trying to do is communicate the need for soil moisture in a way that people are nervous if they don't have the data, that they can make a decision tomorrow by having the data today. If we can do that better, then they'll have there's going to be a greater likelihood of funding, and we can do the work that we need to do.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.